This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Angry crowds demand that a military dictator step down and restore democracy. A no-brainer, right? Except that the military ruler is critical to support military operations in Afghanistan and the broader war on al-Qaeda, and his political opponents include Islamic radicals. Oh, and his country has nuclear weapons. The dilemma's name is General Pervez Musharraf, who seized power in Pakistan in 1999, and the unrest stems from his attempts to hang on, both as president and head of the armed forces, for another 5 years. Let me throw in one more ingredient. Most experts believe that Osama bin Laden, al-Qaeda, and the Taliban live on in parts of Pakistan that the central government either cannot or will not control, and you can see just how deeply invested we are in the outcome of the current crisis in Pakistan. Later on in the program, The Sopranos on the opinion page this week. What did you think of the ending? Email us, talk@npr.org. But first, why Pakistan matters. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin here in Studio 3A with an NPR intelligence correspondent, Mary Louise Kelly, who was in Pakistan earlier this year. Nice to have you back on the program.
Hi, Neil. Nice to be back.
The stated U.S. policy is to promote democracy, especially in the Islamic world. So why does the United States support General Musharraf?
Well, the stated U.S. policy is, of course, to promote democracy everywhere in the world. But clearly, the overriding priority for the U.S. and Pakistan is the war on terror, is counterterrorism efforts. And I think the Bush administration continues to believe President Musharraf is their best partner in that effort. Now, clearly, there's a lot he hasn't done, and there is mounting frustration, I think it's fair to say, among people you talk to here in Washington about the situation on the Afghan-Pakistan border, about the fact that al-Qaeda and the Taliban, as you mentioned, have reestablished sanctuaries, and Pakistan does not appear willing or perhaps able to do much about it. But in the same breath, officials will still point to the dozens of significant captures, arrests of al-Qaeda leaders in Pakistan, operations carried out with the help of Pakistani security forces. And they will point out that these successes have come at great personal political cost to Musharraf, who has survived a number of assassination attempts by Islamist radicals at this point. So there is a sense that whoever succeeds Musharraf may well not be as sympathetic to U.S. interests in Pakistan. I think there's also probably a large dose of the better the devil you know factor at play here. Musharraf isn't perfect, but he's the only leader that this administration has worked with in Pakistan. At least they know what they're getting. And that's the big fear in Pakistan, is the fear of unknown, is the fear of who may succeed Musharraf, and might that person be a whole lot worse than what they've got now.
Again, going back to Pakistan, Afghanistan, where the United States has tens of thousands of forces and is involved in a long-running war now, that's a landlocked country. To support the war in Afghanistan, the United States needs bases and overflight rights to get materials to and from that place. And Pakistan is the only country, really, that can provide those routes.
That's absolutely right. U.S. and NATO supply lines, for the most part, run through Pakistan. The airspace is critical, so there is a lot of concern about what might happen if, as we say, someone who is not as sympathetic to U.S. and Western interests were to come into power there. It also is, of course, a severe limitation in terms of what U.S. forces feel that they should or might be able to do inside Pakistan to help resolve some of these issues of sanctuary of extremists. They don't want to do anything that is going to cut off supply lines to Afghanistan, where the U.S. is involved in critical fighting.
And some of those incidents that we've seen in Afghanistan where innocent people were apparently killed in attempts to hit Taliban remnants or al-Qaeda fighters, those kinds of attacks have also happened on Pakistani soil with the same kind of repercussions. How dare you?
Absolutely. We've seen in Pakistan, which certainly compared to Afghanistan was until quite recently very stable. We've seen suicide bombings, which are new in Pakistan. They didn't used to have them there. There's now almost every week you read the news out of particularly these northwest provinces along the tribal belt with Afghanistan. There are suicide bombings inside Pakistan. There have been assassination attempts against Musharraf and his prime minister. Attacks within the last year on, for example, army bases inside Pakistan. So mounting instability inside Pakistan. And I think this is probably certainly a factor in the rethinking that is going on in Washington, as you know, President Musharraf has been seen as the person who could deliver stability. If he's no longer able to deliver that stability, then how does the U.S. calculation change?
Well, joining us now is Ahmed Rashid, a journalist based in Lahore, Pakistan, author of the book Taliban, Militant Islam, Oil, and Fundamentalism in Central Asia. He joins us today on the line from Madrid in Spain. And Ahmed Rashid, nice to have you at least a couple of hours closer to us.
Thank you.
And I want to ask you, begin by asking you, how much trouble is President Musharraf in?
Oh, I think it's very serious, and I think this has been brewing for some time. The point was that this is an election year. Musharraf had to stand for election for another 5 years. He wants to remain president for another 5 years. He wants to keep his army uniform, and he wants to have another general election in which there would be a planned parliament. Now, everybody predicted that this would be a very difficult year for him, unless he was capable, as a military ruler, of reinventing himself. That is, you know, he's been around for 8 years. He needed to completely reinvent himself in order to convince people that he was the best thing going. And clearly, he just hasn't been able to do that. And out of the woodwork has come this controversy over the Chief Justice, which has been quite amazing, simply because the Chief Justice is hardly a person who most Pakistanis would even recognize or know about, yet he's leading this massive movement now, which has been going on for 3 months and shows no signs of abating whatsoever. So I think Musharraf is in deep trouble.
This is the Supreme Justice of the Pakistani Supreme Court, who was fired, basically, by President Musharraf, if I'm getting the story not completely wrong, basically for quibbling with the idea that General Musharraf should be allowed to stay on for another 5 years.
Well, exactly. What happened was Musharraf called him in along with five other generals and asked the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to resign. And the Chief Justice uncharacteristically refused to resign. And Musharraf then had him suspended. And the case is now going on in the Supreme Court about that suspension. And he may, in fact, be reinstated again, which would cause bigger trouble for Musharraf. Now, the reason Musharraf wanted him to resign was that he didn't trust him in the build-up to the elections, because during this whole next 6 months, there would be petitions to the Supreme Court saying that what Musharraf was doing was illegal, it was against the Constitution, and he wanted a Chief Justice there who would just throw these petitions out and allow Musharraf to do what he wanted to do.
We want to get listeners involved in this conversation. Why does Pakistan matter? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Aaron. Aaron calling us from Providence in Rhode Island.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'd just like to say that Pakistan really definitely is the epicenter of the war on al-Qaeda. And I think even though Pervez Musharraf is definitely not a democratic leader, he is definitely important enough that we should support him, basically, because democracy does not always start with, you know, democratic elections, and then everything goes from there. If you look at Gaza, for example, there were democratic elections, an extremist government was elected, and civil war ensued. So basically, democracy cannot happen overnight, and sometimes dictators are in the best interest of democracy.
Yet Pakistan was a democracy, Mary Louise Kelly, and most people would say it still is in some respects.
Well, certainly the last civilian democratically elected leader back in the 90s, Nawaz Sharif, who is the prime minister who was toppled by Musharraf when Musharraf orchestrated the coup back in 1999, he was democratically elected. Many people would point out that there were many, many problems in the country, though. It was an economic basket case, among other things. Clearly, the partnerships with Taliban and other extremist elements were not to the West's liking. Musharraf would argue that he was reelected in the most recent elections, but clearly those were probably not elections that were exactly to the standard of the West. And the question, as Ahmed Rashid pointed out, is what's going to happen this fall? in Pakistan. They're coming up to elections. There have been a lot of questions about Musharraf and what his intentions are and what he may politically be able to pull off at this point, weakened as he is by the events of these past 3 months.
And Ahmed Rashid, at this point, does the endorsement of the United States, is that a plus or a minus in terms of President Musharraf's standing with the Pakistani people?
Well, I think it's a big minus at the moment, because what is happening is, I mean, at the moment in the streets is a section of the liberal establishment. You've got judges, you've got lawyers, you've got civil society, and non-governmental groups, the media is very much supporting this movement. Now, these are not sort of extremists or fundamentalists. This is very much part of your, as we in Pakistan say, suited booted. This is part of the suited booted elite. They are, you know, becoming extremely anti-American, because what they see is a complete contradiction. The other day, Condoleezza Rice was castigating the ruler of Venezuela for taking over a TV station. At the same time, Musharraf had just passed this incredible ordinance, which was really restricting all the TV stations in Pakistan and not allowing them to run any live talk shows or live commentary. So, and she had nothing to say about that. And, you know, so, I mean, Pakistanis noticed that, and that was a very big headline in the Pakistani media. So I think this, what is happening is that the majority of Pakistanis are getting very turned off by the Americans. If more turning off was needed after the blunders of the Bush administration in Iraq, but certainly I think in relation to now what the American position is. And you see, it's a very, unfortunately, the American position is not even very clear. It seems that the main spokesman, Richard Boucher, the Assistant Secretary of State for South Asia, sends very garbled messages every few days, and but mostly in support of Musharraf, but not clear at all as to where the U.S. stands.
Aaron, thanks very much for the call. We're talking today about the crisis in Pakistan, why it matters here at home. In a couple of minutes, we'll find out if all the hand-wringing in Washington has changed anything on the ground in Pakistan. NPR's Philip Rees will join us from Lahore. Also, more of your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Protesters in Pakistan demand that the military ruler there step down, though there's no indication of who or what would replace him. And for the U.S., the crisis poses a difficult dilemma. Today we're talking about the instability in that country and why we need to care about the future of Pakistan. To hear what former Pakistani prime ministers hope for their country, you can stop by at npr.org. NPR's intelligence correspondent Mary Louise Kelly is in Studio 3A with us. Also on the line with us from Madrid, Spain today is Ahmed Rashid, the author of Taliban, Militant Islam, Oil and Fundamentalism in Central Asia. If you have questions about the current crisis in Pakistan or why it matters here at home, our number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Abdur. Abdur with us from Michigan.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. As a keen observer of Pakistan, my prediction is that President Musharraf will survive the present crisis. This is because, you know, the common man has not taken to the street against him. Usually you see lawyers, you know, and just for example, if there are 600 or 700 lawyers demonstrating in Lahore, in the city of Lahore, you know, there are about 14,000 registered lawyers in Lahore alone. So you can do the math. So I think he will survive the present crisis. And regarding, just a quick point, regarding his controversy regarding the control of the media, he is the one who actually allowed large amount of TV channels to be opened in a country. And they actually have a total freedom of expression. This is unprecedented in Pakistan. Now, what has happened is that these TV channels has been doing a lot of sensationalism in showing the news. I mean, you can take an example of, for example, you know, our channels here in the U.S. showing, like, dead U.S. soldiers coming from Iraq. You know, that type of sensationalism. So what President Musharraf and his government tried to do was to bring about a code of conduct but actually it was taken in the wrong way. But all in all, I think I'm optimistic. I think he will survive this crisis, and I think we will see much of him in the future.
Ahmed Rashid, what do you think?
Well, you know, I mean, the point is that it's not just 600 or 700 lawyers who are demonstrating. The entire legal community in the country is coming out in favor of the Chief Justice. And in fact, in the beginning of this protest back in March, when a handful of lawyers supporting Musharraf came out, they were dealt very roughly by the other lawyers, and nobody has protested, has come out in favor of Musharraf after that. Secondly, travel, you know, the Chief Justice travels in these cavalcades of cars. A month ago, he traveled from Islamabad to Lahore, a journey which usually takes about 4 hours. It took him 27 hours because the people came out into the streets. And it was estimated that perhaps 1 million people came out during that journey to see him along the way, from villages and towns, you know, along the main highway. Now, I mean, nobody can say that this is not a movement that has not aroused the masses after this kind of turnout. Now, as far as the media is concerned, yes, it's absolutely true. I mean, Musharraf, actually, this process was started by Benazir Bhutto in the 90s, but Musharraf has allowed more and more, especially TV news channels, to start up. But I think, you know, the army was really flummoxed by this live showing of the Chief Justice's speeches, his processions, and these live talk shows that were being held, in which a lot of people castigated the army for, you know, acting the way it was. So I think the army has really been taken by surprise by the extent of this media coverage, and therefore has been trying to limit it.
Thanks very much.
Can I respond to that?
Okay. Abdur, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Joining us now is Philip Reeves, NPR's foreign correspondent based in India, who's been covering the crisis in Pakistan. And he is in Lahore today, normally Ahmed Rashid's hometown. Philip, nice to have you on the line with us today.
Hi.
Situation is, as it develops there, as you look at the people who are protesting against Musharraf, who is the opposition? Are these radical Islamists? Are these, Ahmed Rashid was saying, the suited and booted opposition?
No, it's a quite wide and widening group of people. It represents civil society, it represents human rights campaigners, lawyers, of course, who are at the forefront of the whole thing and started it, opposition political parties, more secular in Lahore than Islamists, because the Islamists are not so strong here. But you do see the Islamist parties in Islamabad and elsewhere. However, although I've just started hearing what Ahmed was saying just a moment ago about whether this is a popular movement, although there have been very large numbers on the streets at times when the Chief Justice, for example, came here to Lahore, as he mentioned, and also recently in Abbottabad up in the north, there have been those who've sought to argue, those who tend to defend Musharraf, that this is not in fact a popular movement, and that if you look at the other times when the Chief Justice cavalcade has taken to the streets, the crowds have been noisy, they have been passionate, but they have not been enormous in size. That might represent the police presence, or it might represent the fact that the popular masses are still not fully engaged in this. Whether, however, you need the popular masses to engage in these things and to change power in Pakistan is another issue. As Ahmed Rashid knows very well, power tends to change hand in Pakistan without necessarily involving a popular mass movement.
And that raises a question, which is the centrality of the army presence. President Musharraf, we call him sometimes, General Musharraf the rest of the time. He's the head of government, the head of state, and the head of the armed forces.
Right. And, you know, let's not make any bones about it. He's a military ruler, and increasingly so. And one of the interesting things about the argument that he makes that he's an enlightened moderate was indeed the move that he made against the media, which Ahmed was talking about just now. You know, he decided that he was going to issue an emergency ordinance. He largely rules by decree, cracking down on the electronic media. He apparently had been offended by live TV coverage of the judges' rallies, particularly a seminar in Islamabad in which The judge was heard saying power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And this allowed the regulatory authorities in Pakistan to seal the premises and suspend the licenses of broadcasters without any mechanism for those broadcasters to put their side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly, the journalists then took to the streets, making this a wider protest movement against Musharraf, but Musharraf withdrew that order. And I think that's the first significant climb down from him we've seen since the crisis began.
Let me read you an email that we got that raises a couple of points. I want Ahmed Rashid to weigh in on this as well. This from Alex in Wichita, Kansas. Most Pakistanis do not want a fundamentalist Islamic regime in power. Quite frankly, that's not the only substitute to Musharraf's dictatorship. He has the Western world terrified with the portrayal of his government as the last and only frontier against the Taliban-like fundamentalists taking over the government and getting control of the nuclear weapons. Simply because Musharraf happens to be a strategic ally does not make him any less of a dictator. And Ahmed Rashid, let me ask you, there has been a certain point of saying after me the apocalypse is General Musharraf the only alternative in terms or the radical Islamist standing next in line?
No, I don't think so. I mean, what this whole protest movement over the last 3 months shows is that the Pakistani middle classes are democratically minded. I mean, they want an end to military rule and they want free and fair elections. Now, you couldn't have a more proper and basic demand which would be acceptable by, for example, the Bush administration anywhere else in the world. Nobody here is demanding Sharia or Islamic law or an Islamic system. Now, what is happening is that I think certainly fundamentalism and Talibanization is on the increase, and there has been enormous increase in violence by the Taliban and sort of terror tactics being used by them in the northwest frontier province along the border with Afghanistan, and the military has not responded, and that has created the suspicion amongst many people and the media that Musharraf is quietly allowing the fundamentalists to do the worst they can so that he can then red flag the international community and Americans and say, you know, after me the deluge. But I think the truth is very far from that. I think what people want is a free and fair election which would throw up a genuinely empowered civilian government, which should then certainly seek a partnership with the military, because clearly there's no way you can rule or govern Pakistan without some kind of support from the military, and you would need the military also in the war on terror. All this would need a grand reconciliation between the army and the politicians and the protesters, and the point is that Musharraf is not showing any signs of wanting to attempt this reconciliation. Mm-hmm. He wants to go down his own way, and he's just in the last 48 hours he gave an interview to an Arab TV station saying, I will stand for elections in my uniform, and there's no question of me doing any kind of U-turn or any kind of turnaround. So I think that is what is worrying people.
Philip Reeves, let me ask you to weigh in on that too.
Well, it's one of the most commonly said things to me in the last week that I've been in Lahore is that Musharraf is presenting himself to the outside world as someone who is a bulwark against Islamist extremism. But Pakistanis who I've been talking to say he isn't in fact that. In fact, in many ways, he's encouraged Islamist extremism for the very reasons that Ahmed Rashid has just outlined, that he hasn't tackled the rise of Talibanization in the northwest frontier province, for instance. And there's another interesting phenomenon happening here, and that is that when you talk to cosmopolitan, to put it in rather clumsy terms, sort of Western-leaning, educated Pakistanis who have a strong desire for democracy, they will argue now that by supporting Musharraf, the U.S. is leading them to become anti-American in their attitude. In other words, that they're not disposed naturally to be anti-American, although many of them will have deep reservations about the war in Iraq and perhaps also the handling of the Afghanistan situation and Israel-Palestine and so on, but that this insistence in supporting Musharraf and thus, in their minds, standing in the way of their aspirations to introduce democracy to Pakistan is in them, not a naturally anti-American constituency, creating anti-American feelings.
Philip Reeves, our correspondent, who's with us today from Lahore in Pakistan. Also with us on the line is Ahmed Rashid, author of Taliban, Militant Islam, Oil and Fundamentalism in Central Asia. He's with us today from Madrid in Spain. With us here in Studio 3A is NPR intelligence correspondent Mary Louise Kelly. If you'd like to join our conversation about why the future of Pakistan means so much to the future of the United States, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Mary Louise Kelly, let's get back to the question of the fight against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, which, as we say, widely suspected to have reestablished training bases and operational bases in the western parts of Pakistan, that tribal area. First of all, the government can't do anything about this?
Well, this is the question, of course, here. There's a lot of skepticism, for example, building on Capitol Hill in Congress, the democratically controlled Congress here in Washington, about whether Pakistan is, in fact, doing everything that it could do. And there has been a move to consider linking some of the extraordinary amount of U.S. aid to Pakistan to better performance on the counterterrorism front and also to some democratic reforms, but basically saying we have given more than $10 billion in aid, and that's just the official number. There's more flowing through covert channels, which may well bump up the overall figure, and that the U.S. is not getting as much back as it would like. Mm-hmm. So certainly skepticism is mounting. President Musharraf's line has been that they have 80,000 troops on the Pakistani side of the border who are doing everything they can within limitations. And what's happening on the other side of the border? You know, if the U.S. and NATO can't control what's going on their side of the border, how can we, Pakistan, do more on our side? He's tried a couple of different strategies, which Phil and Ahmed Rashid would know better than I, but a couple of different strategies in these tribal areas from sending in Pakistani troops. That was not overwhelmingly successful. The Pakistani army suffered a large number of casualties. Last year, they've launched another policy, which involves pulling the army back out of the towns, cutting deals with the tribal leaders there. That has been roundly criticized in the West. So the question is, what do you do now? And they keep trying to evolve this strategy. And as I say, I think frustration is mounting in Washington that more could or should be done. So then the question is, what do you do about it? Do you dangle more sticks in terms of trying to reduce foreign aid? Some argue that that will undermine those who back the U.S. Within Pakistan's military and government and increase skepticism among those who will point to the sketchy track record of U.S. involvement in Pakistan. The U.S. has worked closely with Pakistan when the U.S. thinks it serves their interests and has pulled back on funding and pulled back on diplomatic efforts when the U.S. has had other interests to pursue, or when it, you know, according to the Pakistani view, has tired of engagement in the region. So there's a lot of skepticism for some pretty good historical reasons in terms of how deep-seated the U.S. commitment to Pakistan is. A lot of fears that when Osama bin Laden is captured, when Afghanistan hopefully calms down at some future point, that the U.S. may turn its back and walk away again.
But Ahmed Rashid, as Mary Louise Kelly also said, considerable skepticism in Washington that, in fact, General Musharraf and Pakistan's army is doing all that they can. Are they doing everything they can or as much as they can get away with?
I think probably as much as they can get away with. It's been a known fact that Mullah Omar and much of the Taliban leadership have been living in Pakistan for the last 5 years since 9/11, since they fled Afghanistan after being defeated. There's one issue with the Taliban where I think more or less Musharraf has been doing what he can in helping the Americans and certainly delivered a lot of Taliban leaders. But there is enormous skepticism that in fact the military, the intelligence services are backing the Taliban resurgence in Afghanistan, which is of course what is claiming more and more lives of the both Western forces. Yesterday we had an attack on President Karzai, a rocket attack on him by the Taliban. So the the big, I think, question mark within the U.S. military, the CIA, within the organizations which are very active in Afghanistan, I think there's a big question mark about Musharraf's commitment on actually rooting out the Taliban. And that is what is really the big issue, because now the Taliban have, if you like, not just active in Afghanistan, but they're very active in Pakistan. And these are not Afghans, but Pakistani Taliban, who've taken their cue from Al-Qaeda and from the Afghan Taliban movement, and are now trying to create a kind of Talibanized base area inside Pakistan. And this is what, you know, your middle classes, your secular democratic parties, your lawyers and other people are very much against. And this is what they blame Musharraf for.
Ahmed Rashid, thank you so much, as always, for your time. Ahmed Rashid, a freelance journalist based in Lahore, joining us today from Madrid in Spain. Our thanks as well to NPR's Philip Reeves in Lahore, Pakistan today, and Mary Louise Kelly here in Washington. This is NPR News.